is about. There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
All right, and welcome to the brand new Nicole Sandler Show at RadioOrNot.com. I hope you've... I've got stuff open here. You know, it would help if I turned down the audio there. And there, we should be good now. I hope you've had a chance to check out the new website. It's been a busy few days here, and let me bring you up to date a little bit. For those of you, well, everyone's just joining us. It is a whole new world, but it's a world that I've visited before. You see, I use this theme song, History Repeating, by the Propellerheads, by the way, featuring Shirley Bassey, for good reason. Because history does repeat itself over and over and over again. And even in the sense of my career, I have been through this before. And it's not, it certainly doesn't make it any easier when you live through it. But this is not the first time my company has gone out of business or closed its doors. Or in radio, format changes happen. You know, a station will be plugging along, and then oftentimes it just happens like that. They give you no advance notice. And you'll notice I've got a lot of radio stuff up here in the studio on the microphone. These are all remnants of old radio stations that I've worked at. And, if you were with me live on Thursday night, that day we had just gotten the news that Air America was filing Chapter 7. They were done, shutting the doors. It was all over. And I was still shell-shocked, as were many of my coworkers at the time, understandably so. I'm not sure what anybody else is doing on Air America. I did hear today that Ron Reagan is going to keep his show going. KTPK in Seattle is going to keep running it. Beyond that, I don't know. As for me, I can only do what I do. You know, I had two choices. I could have crawled into bed, pulled the cover up over my head, and cried, or I could have gotten to work. And I got to thank you, the listeners, because you guys have been so encouraging. The emails have been wonderful. And those of you who've gone to the website at RadioOrNot.com and made a donation, I can't thank you enough. You know, it's going to be a tough... as they say, row to hoe for the coming weeks and months. I don't know if I will be able to get back up on another radio station or not. I do know that, and if you go to the website, you'll see my blog today. I wrote about that I've been through this whole internet thing before. In fact, the stations I've got on here, the Mike Flag. See this one, Channel 103.1? Channel 103.1 was a clear channel radio station in California. And the station was owned by Clear Channel. That station grew out of the ashes of another station, KSCA, that has become this legendary thing in LA. It really was an awesome, very unusual, great radio station. It was the last station owned by Gene Autry and his Golden West broadcasters. One of these nights, maybe even later tonight, I'll go into better detail on it, on the history of that. But that station died when, thanks to Bill Clinton, who signed the Telecommunications Act of 1996 and opened the floodgates for consolidation for a company like Clear Channel to own 1,200 radio stations. Before that time, the limits were, I believe, 7 a.m., 7 FM and 1 TV per market. You know what? I think it was less than that. I think it was so long ago. My memory's gone, you know. But I think it was less than that. It might have been 3 and 1, something like that. Now, that's right, because now one company can own up to 8 radio signals in a market. It has to do with a market share, but it comes out to about 8 stations in a market. You know what? At first it was 1 AM, 1 FM, 1 TV. That was the Limits. All right. I haven't revisited it in a while. Anyway, so stations started being bought and sold. It was the era of consolidation and people were losing jobs. And as more and more radio stations were consolidated under one group, under one management team, the whole idea of voice tracking came into play. And I'll share more with you about that at another time, too. But anyway, so KSCA had gone off the air. I moved down to San Diego for a short while. And while I was down there, I was co-hosting the morning show on a very cool alternative station called 91X. While I was down there, I got wind that Clear Channel was looking at bringing back a AAA station to Los Angeles. AAA stands for Adult Album Alternative, meaning eclectic rock. And there aren't stations like this in every city. So anyway, the long story short, they brought me back up to LA. I was the music director. It was a very cool radio station. It wasn't, well, it was a good radio station. But after about 2 years of this station, again, the consolidation monster reared its head and Clear Channel was merging with another broadcasting behemoth called AM/FM. And once the merger was completed, the resulting entity known as Clear Channel also would own too many stations in Los Angeles. So they needed to divest some. And our station was actually Two Signals. So we were sold. Station was going off the air. But this was in 2000, just as the dot-com boom was exploding, right? So I went to my boss, who was very cool, great guy, and said, you know, we should take advantage of this. We should be the first station to go off the air directly onto the internet without skipping a beat. We'll do it seamlessly. We'll flip a switch and be internet only. And, you know, Clear Channel at the time had just launched their, web department and everything. So it was, you know, the timing was right and they went for it. And up on my blog now, tonight at radioornot.com, you'll see I put links to both my account of it, my written account of it that I wrote for a trade publication, plus the coverage from the Chicago Tribune and the Washington Post and the New York Times. It was a huge event. The problem was we were too early. It was the year 2000. Okay, here we are now, 10 years later. See, I thought the time was right then. It's now 10 years later. Big difference. Most homes now have high-speed internet. Back then, it was the click and wait syndrome. You'd click and wait for the page to download. Do you remember trying to watch video online when you were on a dial-up connection? Pretty difficult. And even to stream audio, it was a lot of buffering. Well, things have advanced exponentially since then, right? And I also posted a link to an article from Consumer Reports about a Blaupunkt in-dash Wi-Fi internet radio that was introduced at the Consumer Electronics Show last month, or not even a couple of weeks ago in Vegas. So maybe the time is right now. We'll see. I mean, it's a tough climate economically. Advertising, you know, that's why Air America probably went. You know, in addition to all the other troubles they had, it was a tough time to sell advertising. And that's why so many broadcast stations are having trouble. Regardless, I'm going to give this a shot. And I thank you so much for being along at the beginning. Okay, so thank you. If you're not on my email list yet, I hope you will go to radioornot.com and sign up. I sent out an email blast today to let everybody know we'd be doing this. Right now, the show is going out over the Ustream stream. I hope by the end of the week to have an audio stream as well. So for people who listen on Wi-Fi internet radio, you'll be able to pick it up. I'm working on all this. If you've logged onto the website, you notice the new design. I gotta thank Heather Chase. Heather is a listener from Houston who obviously does this for a living and she does great work. And she was here on Thursday night when I did my bit of a tearful show that night. And she went ahead and actually took it upon herself to retool my website, just out of the kindness of her heart. And I can't thank her enough. So she and I spoke over the weekend. We tweaked it a little bit, and we've both been working feverishly on it all day today. Obviously, there are going to probably be some bugs in there, and it'll take some more tweaking, but I'm loving it. And so Heather Chase, there is a link to her at the bottom of the page and in the email news blast I sent out today too. So if you need some web work, check out what she did, and and thank you, Heather. All right. Now, because I was so busy all day today, I'm sort of flying by the seat of my pants today here on the Nicole Sandler Show. So I haven't had time to read, do my regular reading and do what I usually do. I mean, I feel terrible. I feel horribly unprepared for my first show of the new, new venue here. So I'm a little bit out of sorts, but we'll take a musical interlude in a couple of minutes. That's the other thing I love. I get to play music. I'll connect with Brent Badowski, who will be joining us. Brent has a great piece up at thehill.com. And you know, Brent, if I can find where he is, because I thought I kept him up here. Seems like I must have let it go. Hold on. As I bring it up and try to talk and chew gum at the same time. Brent Badowski, you know, Washington insider for seemingly forever, who blogs at thehill.com. He's a columnist and also writes on the Pundit's blog. You know what? I'll bring it up during the break. See, this is what I get for trying to do it while I'm talking. I'm sorry. Oh, so Heather is in the chat room now on the Ustream stream. She said, if anyone notices any bugs, you can send them to her. Chase@editedforcontent.com. Chase@editedforcontent.com. And, she just did such an amazing job. And Heather, I can't thank you enough. So anyway, Brent Badowski, who has been very outspoken, in his, disgust with the Democratic Party of late, wrote a piece for, the Pundit's blog at The Hill on Friday, the American Elections for Americans Only Act of 2010, as his answer to for the Supreme Court decision of last Thursday. Boy, talk about getting off to a really shitty start. This is the other thing I like. I can curse because we're only on the internet now. It'll take some getting used to because you don't do that into a radio. But my goodness, we are what, 3 weeks into the new year? We had, Scott Brown win the seat that Ted Kennedy held in the U.S. Senate for 46 years, a Republican male centerfold model, right? We had the Supreme Court gut the Constitution. An Air America die. I mean, that's bad enough for 1 week, right? So, anyway, there's somebody, I should turn off the chat while I'm talking because I get distracted. All right, let's do this. We will take a quick break here. Not really a break. We're going to play some music. This one sets the stage right. It is Dave Edmunds, and it's sort of, it's how I'm feeling today. It's Graham Parker, not Dave Edmunds. It's Graham Parker doing a Dave Edmunds song. Ay, ay, ay. It's Crawling from the Wreckage, Graham Parker, radio or not.
Got out really early from the factory, driving like a nut in the rain. I don't think I was acting so hysterically, but I didn't see a thing until it came. Met the dumb suburbos in the takeaway, beating up the shiny at the counter. I put a few inside me at the end of the day. I took out my revenge on the revolution counter. Crawling from the wreckage, crawling from the wreckage. walks but with his exploding nose. He'd been giving it maximum today. He shouted, how the devil you in trouble, I suppose. But all you ever do is run away. Gunned up the motor into hyperdrive. I didn't want to take any of that. Don't get bright ideas about suicide. Cause all I ever hear is zoom, bang, 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 splat. Crawling from the wreckage, crawling from the wreckage. Bits of me are scattered in the trees and on the hedges. Crawling from the wreckage, crawling from the wreckage. And into a brand new car. Well, well, well. Seems to happen that ain't happened before. I see it all through flashes of depression. Drop my drink and hit some people running for the door. I gotta make some kind of impression. Cause when I'm disconnected from the driving wheel, I'm only half the man that I should be. Mental hits and mental is all I feel. Like everything's as good as it possibly could be. Crawling from the wreckage, crawling from the wreckage. You think by now at least I have my brain will get the message. Crawling from the wreckage, crawling from the wreckage. And into a brand new car. Well, well, well. Crawling from the wreckage, crawling from the wreckage. Crawling from the wreckage, crawling from the wreckage. Crawling from the wreckage.
All right. Not the best, recording, but a cool acoustic version of Graham Parker playing Dave Edmunds crawling from the wreckage, and that's sort of what I'm doing. If you saw me lost in thought during that, here's the problem. You know, I've got this Mac, and I was going to check my email on the Mac while we were on the air, because I'm expecting to hear back from a couple of guests. I told you I got started late today on the booking because I was so busy with the new website and everything. But on my Mac, my dock disappeared, but I can't restart the computer because then I'll lose the Ustream. You know, this is, it's the growing pains. All right. So let's just try this. We'll call Brent Badowski. And see if he's there as it dials, and well, one ringy dingy. Let's see. Ah,
hello.
Hey, Brent. Nicole Sandler.
Hello.
Hi. We are live on RadioOrNot.com.
Welcome.
Well, welcome.
You're the NFL.
Thank you so much. You are my first guest of the newly reincarnated Nicole Sandler Show.
Well, I'm honored.
Well, I'm honored that you would join me. I thank you so much. We got the new website up and running, thanks to a listener, Heather Chase.
And, you do.
Yeah, but, you know, I got to figure out the phone thing because, you know, I have to call you and put you up live on the air. But we're getting there. It's a work in progress. So, Brent Badowski, we had the week from hell last week, didn't we?
Yeah, we've had a few of them recently, but last week took the cake.
Starting with Tuesday and the special election in Massachusetts for the U.S. Senate seat held by Ted Kennedy for 46 years. What do you attribute Scott Brown's win to?
Oh, a lot of things coming together at once with the public that is angry with everything in Washington, and they wanted to vote for the outsider. I think you had a lot of the white working class voters that have historically voted for Democrats are worried about jobs, worried about unemployment, worried about their health care, and are not comfortable with the health care bill, for better or worse.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them voted. You had some depression of liberal turnout, but they did show up in the end when it got nationalized. But basically, you had a lot of voters who were angry with the way Washington is working, and they voted for the outs against the ins, and we were the ins.
So, but one thought was that Massachusetts already has statewide universal health care. They have a plan that I know, you know, works because I think something like 96-97% of the people are covered, but it is very expensive. And so some people maybe were voting against that. There are other people who say, well, health care is not an issue for them because they already have it. Did that come into play? Do you think this was a referendum on Obama's presidency?
It was a referendum on we don't like the way things are going, and Obama and Democrats in Congress happen to be doing the power structure while things are happening that people don't like. I think to a degree, the fact that Massachusetts had a health care bill, health care law is probably a factor. But really, in the end, I don't think that was a big deal. I think it was a bigger deal that people look at the health care bill and they see a bill they don't understand. They see a bill they don't know what it's going to do for them. They see a bill that obviously was the subject of all kinds of backroom deals and buyouts of senators and all kinds of maneuverings and insurance lobbying and drug lobbying. And the president never explained it. The Congress voted for a hodgepodge. It may be somewhat better than not doing it, maybe. But it's not a bill that made a compelling case, and the procedure was uglier than a pig. And you can put a tuxedo on a pig, but at the end of the day, you got the pig, not the tuxedo.
Or lipstick.
Yeah.
To go back to the campaign. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what voters saw. Mm-hmm. And the way the health care bill was done, coupled with the fact that it was not understood, really just factored in to the bigger picture of what's wrong with Washington. A lot of bickering, a lot of deal making, a lot of backroom, a lot of lobbying, a lot of campaign contributions. And it just looked like the whole bill had been so bought and sold by so many different people that the average voter got left out in the cold, which to some degree I think is true.
I think you're right. And you and I spoke about this health care bill so many times over the last few months, and actually I vacillated. I went back and forth, and I had actually come around to the point where I thought, all right, they need to pass something and then make it better. But towards the end, right before Scott Brown was elected, actually, my thought was, you know what? If this goes through the way it is, the more I looked into that Cadillac tax, I was of the mind where I thought we'd be better off killing it and coming back and passing a series of smaller bills to get the insurance industry regulated and get some, you know, get some basic structure through there, like no more pre-existing conditions or rescission, things like that. Is that, do you think, how they're going to wind up going now?
Well, I think we're down to two possibilities. One of them is the one that I favored. Call it the gutsy possibility,
mm-hmm.
where the first thing that happens is the Senate does a vote using reconciliation, which is a majority vote procedure, and they pass changes in that by majority vote to the Senate bill on a different vehicle. I'd like to see them include the public option. I'd like to see them include repealing the price-fixing exemption for the mm-hmm. insurers so they couldn't fix prices.
Yep.
I'd like to see them put something in about importing drugs at lower prices that would make it legal. I'd like to see that kind of stuff put in, and you fix some of the crap that is in the Senate bill, like the buyout of our friend Senator Nelson from Nebraska, that he's embarrassed in. Now, what they could do is they pass that first by a majority vote in the Senate,
right.
And then the House could pass the Senate health care bill that's already passed and the cleanup that the majority vote would also send over to the House. That is plan A from my point of view. Now, do I think they'll go as far as I want? No. I don't think they got the principles or the guts to pass the public option in any way. I don't think they got the principles or the guts to take on the drug companies or the insurers. So plan B is what they're probably going to do, I would guess. But this is changing by the hour. They might just water the whole thing down and try to pass something that's minor. The worst case is if all they do is pass the Senate bill with nothing, and you get the Senate bill as law. And
I don't think that's going to happen. Do you?
No, I don't think that's going to happen because I don't think you have the votes, in the House to do it.
Right.
So the most likely outcome is a watered down bill. The second most likely outcome is what I'm for, which is you pass the good stuff that we believe in the Senate by a majority vote on a different vehicle, and you send both of them to the House. Then the House passes both of them. But, these guys are not known for courage under pressure. And even some of the liberals, I can't even tell what they're thinking when I hear them talk because they changed their position in the middle of the sentence, let alone the moderates.
You're right. Brent Podolsky is with us. Now, Brent, you worked in the Senate and the House. You know the procedures. Now, last week, when all this, was coming down after Scott Brown won, Lawrence O'Donnell was on MSNBC, and somebody asked him about reconciliation, and all you need is a 51 vote, simple majority to get things passed. And he said, well, no, there's still procedural votes that take 60 votes, and he confused a whole lot of people. What is the fact here? Isn't reconciliation specifically to get something passed with 51 votes?
Well, to try to make it simple, I think that there are ways it can be done with only 51 votes. There are procedural votes that one could try to get if you're a Republican that might take more. But you can vote, I think, by a majority vote and vote that kind of stuff down without doing it. Look, the whole idea of budget reconciliation was put in to enable them to deal with a deficit without being filibustered all the time. It would obviously be absurd to put in a provision that's designed to have a majority vote, a rule attack that takes more than a majority vote. Mm-hmm. That would negate the entire purpose of doing the thing.
Right.
And I can tell you this, that the top people in Congress, the leadership guys, believe, and I agree with them, that it can be done with a majority vote. That's not the problem, okay? The problem is they don't have the guts to do what they should do. And they're looking for reasons, Larry. He comes out of the Senate Finance Committee. He was chief of staff. He was a great chief of staff when Senator Moynihan was chairman. Mm-hmm. But those guys look at the rules like Talmudic scholars, and they don't really like anything that goes a little bit beyond what they're used to doing. And this, while it is kosher, so to speak, the majority vote, the committee doesn't like itself being bypassed with various procedures. Now, Kent Conrad, by the way, who is not our friend on many issues, he says it could be done by a majority vote.
Hmm. Well, and wasn't that how the Senate was supposed to be? I mean, the Senate was set up to do things by a majority vote. The filibuster was only to be used on very special occasions, right?
The whole Senate has been deformed and corrupted by the abuse of the filibuster. Even in the days of the segregationist South in the 50s and the 1960s, they only used it about 8 to 10% of the time. Now you have it being used on everything. Now the bottom line is you can't change the filibuster rule itself, unfortunately, without 67 votes. I did serious inquiries about whether there was any way to do it, and there really isn't.
I think they can do it at the beginning of the new session, but that would be when the new Congress is sworn in next January.
Yeah, there's nothing we can even think of right now. Now, what we can do, though,
now, what's the nuclear option?
The nuclear option, let me put it this way. If you get to the point where you can negate anything and nobody will do anything,
mm-hmm.
and we're almost there now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What I am for is using the reconciliation procedure for anything that has a significant budget impact, and that's why it was created. And almost everything big does have a significant budget impact. Oddly enough, a lot of the things that we want on the health care bill would lower the deficit. But it's in the end, they say it's about the rules, but it's not. It's not about the rules. It's about the guts. That's the real problem that we have. And if they have the guts to do what they want, they can certainly bring up on reconciliation the public option, the Dorgan Amendment, for sure, because both of them, lowering drug prices and the public option, dramatically lower the deficit by everybody's estimate.
Right.
You know, so they should just go ahead and do it. But the point is they don't want to do it, and so they're using a procedural masquerade you can't do this, and you can't do that, and you can't do this. You can't do that. And that's the problem. They can do it. It's the guts that's lacking, not the rules.
Okay.
On the reconciliation end of it, on the filibuster end of it, there were some things you can't do, and we got a problem having lost that extra seat.
Yes. I suppose so. Brent Podowsky is with us. And so they're waiting for Scott Brown to be seated before anything else happens? I mean, I know I'm hearing bits and pieces, but nothing concrete has been. It seems like everything on health care just stopped because Scott Brown got elected.
Well, they didn't have any choice. The only thing that they could do on health care prior to Brown was to pass the Senate bill.
Right.
Okay. Because CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, has already scored that. All the work has been done.
And the Senate already passed it, right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's already done. You can bring that up and vote on it anytime they want.
But the House won't pass it.
That's not the favored choice.
Right. And I will probably have Congressman Raul Grijalva on the show tomorrow night. He is the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. And now he's gone back and forth, but now he's making noises and saying that there is no way the House will pass that Senate bill as it is.
Personally, I don't think they will.
I don't think so either.
For a lot of different reasons. But no, I don't think they will, and I don't think they should without some kind of a fix of the kind I'm suggesting here.
Right.
On that, first of all, the Senate bill alone is a disaster for labor and working people. The whole point is they thought they could fix it after it passed the Senate. It is just Armageddon for the union guys, and on their behalf. The union guys gave up salaries for 30 years of labor negotiations in return for benefits. And now they're saying, well, in the Senate bill, well we're going to whack your benefits after you gave away your money to get them. And that's wrong. That's inexcusable.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a lot of other problems with the whole mandate issue and a lot of other things. Even, by the way, the pre-existing conditions, which is overstated by the president and the reformers, is what a great thing it is. Under the Senate bill, they could charge 3 to 4 times the premiums to people with pre-existing conditions.
Which they do now.
Yeah, but they could charge 3 to 4 times more.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, so they can effectively choose to not cover you because you can't afford it. Look, and Brent, we've talked about this. My COBRA runs out the end of next month. I was not a full-time staffer at Air America, so I had my 18 months of COBRA from Clear Channel, which is it's coming up the end of February. I'm done, so I've been looking into it, and because I do have a pre-existing condition, I had this squamous cell carcinoma taken off my nose just a month ago. And when I started shopping around, this one guy, I almost had a laugh. He's like, oh, well, you have to be squamous free for 10 years in order for them to even write a policy. So, but there's a HIPAA law. So I can stay with my plan currently is with United Healthcare. If you answer yes to these 6 questions, which I have, and I can run them down for the listeners later, they have to give you continuous coverage. They have to write you a policy. But in essence, basically what it comes down to is their most expensive policy times 2. They double the price on you. So it would cost me about $1,000 a month, and then I'll have a $5,000 deductible before they pay a dime. And then with the way the Senate plan is, guess what? That's considered a Cadillac plan. So for the privilege of paying ridiculous amounts of money for this health insurance policy, I'd be taxed on it too?
No, it's an outrageous thing. It was put in for the idea of being fixed. That's one of the reasons of many that the House shouldn't just pass the Senate bill.
Mm-hmm.
But my problem from the beginning, and I believe me, I've warned people about this. I've warned prominent liberals about this. I won't say who, I shouldn't. But I said, you got to tell people about this pre-existing condition thing.
Uh-huh.
It became this biblical mantra of what a great reform it is. Okay? And here's what's going to happen. This is the politics of it as well as the substance of it. I mean, this thing, let's assume this thing passes and I'm the insurer and you're my customer and you got a pre-existing condition. You're going to get a letter from me and I'm going to say, Sandler, I got a deal for you. Under the Obama health care bill and the Democratic health care bill, we got to give you pre-existing coverage. We're going to do it. We're going to do it because we believe in this bill. So here it is. And you're going to read this thing and you're going to look at it. Well, bro, Brent, it says $23,000 a year, $28,000
yeah.
a year.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say, well, that's what Congress said. And then you're going to go, well, what the hell did Obama say?
Yeah.
What the hell did the Democrats say? They didn't tell me that. So when you see these guys, including some prominent people on TV and radio that say they're for health care, they haven't read the bill. They don't understand what this is going to do. They just get up there and say, well, this is a great thing on pre-existing conditions. It's a lot of crap. It's a ripoff. They will make you an offer you can't accept.
Exactly.
To turn the Godfather on its head.
Yeah. You're right, because you can't afford it. So we're still going to go bankrupt because we get sick or we can't afford to stay healthy.
Yeah, now the House bill is a little bit better, but not that much. But that's the problem. That's the way they buy influence, okay? And that's where the White House let us down. they should have been fighting on that one and said, no, you know, I mean, I believe, you know, in there are states like Vermont where it's maybe, you know, 20% more or something like that. People have to check me on that, where it's slightly more. That's okay. Pay a little bit of extra. But when you get into 200%, 300%, and then you're in an area, some people, where there's high rates to begin with, okay, when you add it all up together, it's a nightmare. I mean, it is not clear to me at this moment whether it's better to pass the bill or not, okay? If they would do what I suggest, but I don't think they're going to do it, you know, you do the other procedure by a majority, and you do the public option, you do the drug pricing, you end price fixing by insurance, you know, then it makes a lot more sense. But if they do a wimp out, you're going to get a lot of people getting these letters in the mail from the insurers with, hey, have we got a deal for you? And they're going to be as angry as people getting letters from the credit card companies were after the credit card bill passed.
Right.
And all they got was increases in fees and interest rates.
That's right. That's right. And that still hasn't gone into effect. I mean, I think that takes effect next month.
Yeah. Well, they're still raising rates and fees as we speak.
Because they can.
And the other thing that they're not telling people is everyone in the audience should check. They were moving people from fixed rates to variable credit card rates.
Mm-hmm.
And that means when the Federal Reserve Board starts raising its rates, which I guarantee you they will be substantially at some point, all the credit card rates that are variable are going to go right up. And they locked that into the system before the credit card bill went into effect. I mean, it's an outrage.
It is an outrage. Now, and all this, the reason that these things happen is because corporations have too much influence over our elected officials. Because even though up until Thursday, there had been controls on how much money corporations could contribute to candidates and to campaigns, there were ways around them. Now, what the Supreme Court did on Thursday, when they ruled on Citizens United versus the Federal Elections Commission, is they totally gutted 100-plus years of regulation, of campaign finance regulation, and said, oh, well, corporations are persons, and they're entitled to free speech, and since they don't really have a voice, their voice is money. So they can spend as much money as they want to buy politicians. And as bad as it has been up until this point, I think we ain't seen nothing yet. Do I have that right, Brent Podowsky?
Oh, yeah. It's a big scary, as they say on Wall Street. And, you know, what we got to do, and I wrote about a piece on the Hill's Pundit site today about this.
The American Elections for Americans Only Act of 2010?
Yeah, yeah. What we have to do at a minimum is any private company, public company, or corporate entity at all that takes foreign investment or foreign money should be covered by McCain-Feingold without the interference of the court. There ought to be limits on what they can spend. We shouldn't allow sovereign wealth funds in the Middle East, for example, that may be anti-Israel or pro-terrorist, but they got a lot of money from certain royal families.
Yeah.
They can invest if they want in Citicorp or Bank of America or Goldman Sachs or whatever they may choose. But those companies that have their money, that have those interests and pressure, should not be allowed to spend unlimited amounts of money. So if you think in terms of foreign money coming in and you bring back the law that the court took away for those companies, that knocks out a lot of the dirty money right off the bat. And that's a hard thing for the Republicans to oppose. American elections should be for American voters, not by foreign funds, whether they're from Venezuela or China,
mm-hmm.
or Saudi Arabia. They shouldn't be able to spend directly or indirectly huge amounts of money to influence our elections. That's wrong, and politically we win that fight, and if Democrats make it, and I'm hoping they will, that's what I'm suggesting for starters.
Well, you know, immediately after the ruling came down, this coalition sprung into action with Public Citizen and a group of others, and they put together a website, freespeechforpeople.org. And what they're pushing for is a constitutional amendment, basically saying that corporations are not people. But that's going to be a long and involved process if they even can get it done in this political climate. Is there an easy fix? I mean, are they going to have to push legislation not on the side of campaign contributions, but on limiting what corporations are allowed to do?
Well, I agree with what they're doing. Okay, about the corporation should not have these broad rights. The problem we have, number one, I don't know how we get anything through the Senate like that right
now.
Because 41 Republicans are going to vote against us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the guy to watch, I will tell the audience here, is John McCain. He has historically been good about the issue. He is also under attack in a Republican primary in Arizona by a talk show host, among others, and a former congressman,
right.
J.D. Hayworth.
Yep.
I would be surprised he would help us that much since he's under attack by a right-wing Republican. But, you know, we got to get a Republican.
Yeah, well, it was his McCain-Feingold, he and Russ Feingold, their campaign finance bill that was gutted by this decision.
Well, yeah, the question is, will he fight for a reform comparable to his bill, certainly of the kind I'm suggesting, or will he bail out on us because he doesn't want to piss off the Republicans in a Republican primary when he's up for re-election?
Well, if history is any indication, John McCain goes any way the wind blows.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, that's why I'm not overly optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree when they're talking about the basic idea of corporations not being the people for purposes of First Amendment rights. The problem is that doesn't help us in 2010. And the only way we win that is a constitutional amendment, and even that's going to be impossible to get through. So I don't know how you get that passed right now, unfortunately, unless you get at least one Republican. What I'm suggesting, if you tie it to foreign money, politically, that's something that I think we would probably get some Republicans on, and anybody that opposes us, we could defeat them in November for being more interested in foreign money than American citizens.
Right,
but the politics of mine, I think, get us get 85% of a loaf and have a good chance of getting it enacted in a law, and that at least would have some effect if they try it before 2010, which is the real danger for us right now.
The thing I don't get is, all right, here we're looking to a Republican to help make this better. We have supposedly 58, if you don't count Joe Lieberman, votes in the Senate. We have an 80-vote or 79 now vote majority in the House, and we still can't get anything done. I mean, it's like the Republicans are running the Senate, 41 to 59 seats.
Oh, it's totally ridiculous. And you know, the only problem is, I don't know what you do about that. I mean, that's the problem. They do have the rule. It's, you know, right now you're going to need 67 votes, you're not going to get to change the rule. I cannot think of a procedure like reconciliation. I mean, reconciliation, to do it, you have to honorably make a credible case that involves the budget, and I don't think campaign finance reform, while it does in a way, you can't do it on everything. You can do it on some of the healthcare stuff. You can do it on jobs. You can do it on taxes. But I'm having trouble, and I've only been thinking about this now for a few days, I'm having trouble thinking of a way to get 60 votes on any kind of a meaningful campaign reform other than something that really breaks it the way I'm suggesting we break it. It is wrong. It is outrageous. It is pathetic. But we're kind of stuck with the rules we got, and it's an outrage. But I don't see how you get around them right now on campaign reform.
So,
I have a way to make it politically impossible for Republicans to oppose. That I think I can do, and that's what I wrote about on the Hill Pundit site today. That's what I'm pushing right now, and I have sent it to the right people, trust me, privately.
I'm sure.
That gets us 85-90% of a loaf, and we can defeat Republicans who would rather stand up for the rights of foreign money to buy American elections.
So, but Brent Podolsky, if they don't follow your advice, all right, here we are, we're at a stalemate. A couple of years ago, if you mentioned one party would have 59 seats in the Senate, people would go, well, that's crazy. And they'll get they'll be able to push their whole agenda through. George Bush was able to push his agenda through with a hell of a lot less than that. The Democrats can't get a damn thing passed. And because the Republicans have made it their mission to shut them down. I think that they will toe this party line. Even if it's good legislation, most of them will just say, the hell with it. We're not going to let them get anything through. As Jim DeMint said about health care, this will be Obama's Waterloo. So When do we come to the realization that our government is severely broken and we're at a stalemate? Nothing's going to get done.
Well, I think we are at that place right now. I think the American people are at that place as well. It's not necessarily to the Republicans' advantage if they keep playing that game, okay? I mean, there are political things Democrats can do, for example, on jobs, but I think we can get 60. I think there are things we can get 60. I mean, there's a point beyond which Republicans don't want to be in the position of killing jobs programs when major elements of the country are having a depression, not only a recession for them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 17%+ of the country is unemployed. So if we make a fight over some of these things, I do think we'll win a few, and I do think Republicans that oppose us will get in big trouble in November. There is a chance that they overplay their hand. The Republican Party is no more popular, even less popular than Democrats right now. And even when he's down, the president's more popular than both of them. What Democrats have to do is have to have bold proposals and fight for them and take it right to them. That's what they have not done so far. That's what they need to do now. And if they do it now, we'll either win on the floor of the House or Senate and get the 60 votes if we need it, or we'll pulverize them in elections, okay, for opposing us. What we don't want to do is act like Republicans, because what Harry Truman said, if you have a campaign and we let the Republicans run against the Republicans, the voters are going to pick the Republican every time. And that's the mistake Democrats make too often.
I get that. You know, Brent Podowsky is with us. Brent Podowsky, a venerable Washington insider who knows the workings of inner Washington and has the ears of a lot of pretty prominent people on the Hill. But I don't think we have ever been at this kind of place in history where we're just so frozen. And, you know, maybe the Democrats should put out a bunch of very simple bills in plain English, you know, one strictly about pre-existing conditions and put cost controls on it. Nothing else in there but that. One that says insurance companies are not allowed to employ the use of rescission anymore, where they cancel you if you get sick, which they are perfectly within their rights to do now. If they put out a bunch of these very simple, straightforward, for the American people kind of bills, and the Republicans hold it up, maybe then the lemmings on the right might see what they're doing. But, you know, we've got this megaphone that calls itself news by way of Fox that tells out and out lies, and these people believe them. I mean, we are in just such a tenuous place in history right now. It's scary.
Well, it is unlike anything that I have ever seen. I mean, it is amazing. Even when we had 60 votes, we couldn't pass anything. Truly, truly amazing. But, you know, we played the can that we got. We do have advantages in that we only need one Republican. And let's assume the politics of this, that we push things like a good jobs program or some good health care reforms, okay? And let's assume every Republican votes against it,
mm-hmm.
Okay? We can then say to all of them running for re-election, it was you who killed it. And it was you who killed it. And that really is politically dangerous for Republicans. And the media hasn't really focused on that because most of them are shallow and they haven't had much experience.
Right, and the media, you have them calling it the government takeover of health care, you know, and framing it.
Well, that's a lot of crap that they never should have been allowed to get away with.
That's right.
You know, but here is Chuck Grassley saying that, the Republican right-wing senator, while Barack Obama is negotiating and pretending he's going to get a bipartisan deal. I mean, that was the most amazing thing I've ever seen, and that was a symptom of where Democrats go wrong. I mean, here's a right-wing Republican, and not only it's a government takeover of health care, but he then goes on and says, Sarah Palin is right about the death panels. The president of the United States wants to kill old people.
Yep.
And then he goes on and says, the same day, Senator Grassley, and I'm the one who held my finger in the dike by stalling this long enough so the Tea Party people can, the right wing can attack the bill. What is the president's response? And Max Baucus and even Harry Reid, who I love? Well, let's try to work it out with them. Now, you know, when they kick you in the nuts, you don't respond with a smiley face. You kick them back.
No. And Barack Obama is trying to be everything to everyone. And in doing so, he's turning out to be nothing for anybody.
No, the whole bill has been a testament to mismanagement and bad negotiating and chicken bleep and influence peddling. And I blame the president. Look, I mean, he stayed out of this until all the damage was done.
Yeah.
You know, and so while the Republicans were bad, he never asked Obama, never even asked Lieberman to support the public option.
Nope.
I mean, he didn't even try.
No.
Okay.
And that makes me wonder, did he not push for it because he cut a secret deal with AHIP, with the big insurance companies,
for
campaign contributions? I mean, that's why, and it goes full circle. That's why we need the damn corporations out of our electoral process. And that's why this Supreme Court ruling was so horrible for our democracy.
No, there's no question about it. And I think we ought to make this, by the way, a major issue in the elections. It could be the issue that turns the elections in our way. And you know, but it's a matter of Democrats have got to make the fight. Remember, the way Washington works is the incumbents get all the money, Democrat and Republican.
Yeah.
And so on campaign finance, everybody, all the Democrats are for the public option while they're against the public option because they want to take the money. And in order to do the kind of challenges to the law that need to be made to go further than McCain-Feingold, which we've now lost, you know, they have to be willing to take on the people that give them the money. I'll tell you one thing. I was on another show. I only have to say this because the host asked me a question and he had a good idea, and I don't want to take credit for the idea.
Okay, who was
The idea was, could we somehow create an entity, okay, that would have the effect of you make a donation, say, to this government entity,
mm-hmm.
and the entity then give you target who gets the money. So you say, I want to make a donation to Congresswoman Sandler.
Mm-hmm.
You give the money to, say, the Federal Election Commission. The Federal Election Commission passes it on to Congresswoman Sandler, but she doesn't know who made the donation. That way you're not buying influence.
Right. Oh, I like that.
I thought that was an ingenious idea, which I wish I had thought of. And I'm going to play with that and see if there's some way. I mean, I love the idea.
Yeah, that's a great idea. That way the money still gets to the candidate, even though it's still not perfect because, you know, they can put a lot of money towards a candidate and money these days.
Yeah, but you're not
going to
vote with them because they gave it the money because
exactly.
You don't know who gave it the money.
Right.
It basically eliminates the political fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it, you know, that golden moment when I say, Congresswoman Sandler, it's great to meet you. Here's $1,000.
Right.
And believe me, I've done a little of that. It's not nice.
Right. Right.
You know, so that's one way I'm going to kind of think about.
So who can name names. Who said that? Whose idea
Tom
was
Kiley
it?
On INN.
Oh, okay.
You know, yeah, I just don't want to claim it as my idea.
Got
you
it.
Know, I'm an honest guy.
Right. No, that's a great idea. You know, we got to do something. I know Alan Grayson introduced like six pieces of legislation the other day. He came on the show Thursday and, he called in not 2 minutes after I got the news that Air America was going dark, and I was shell-shocked. I mean, so I couldn't even tell you what he said. My mind was spinning in 1,000 different directions. But I do know that, you know, sometimes he does things that makes a lot of noise, but he's been real good on the whole campaign financing issue. You know, and again, this coalition that's out there, freespeechforpeople.org, they're really working to do something too.
Oh, I think it's great. We just have to figure out a way to get at least one Senate Republican.
Yeah.
Now, you never know. I can't tell you because I haven't gone over the roll calls recently. This decision, I thought it would be bad, but I was surprised how bad it was. I mean, they really went the distance here.
Oh yeah.
You know, this is the Political Prostitution Act of the Supreme Court, unlike anything that I have ever seen. I mean, even by standards of the court, which aren't the highest, I was stunned by the magnitude of what they're allowing. It's amazing.
Oh, it is amazing. These five justices Someone just wrote in the chat room, should be investigated or more. I mean, I think Roberts should be impeached. The fact that, you know, the Democrats let him be confirmed. You know what? If it was the other way around and Obama put somebody up who was just a flaming liberal on the other side, who was so, you know, I don't know what the correlation would be on the other side. But there's no way the Republicans would let that through. Now, it was during those, not the Supreme Court, but during judicial nominations that the Republicans threatened the so-called nuclear option. What is the nuclear option? How could they have gotten around the filibuster?
Well, they would have filibustered judges, which technically can be done. That's the kind of thing Republicans do. The Democrats don't. Now, on the one I was active on, I was not involved with the Roberts thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was pushing hard, unsuccessfully, to filibuster Alito.
I wish you had been successful there.
Yeah, no, I tried. And Democrats wouldn't do it. It was not Joe Biden's finest hour. It was obvious. See, when you look at the rulings of Roberts historically, or his activity, not so much his rulings, arguably, at times, he could at least claim that he wouldn't make dramatic overturning of precedent, which is what he claimed dishonestly, it turns out, at his confirmation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he fundamentally misled the country and the Congress.
Yes.
When he said he would respect precedent.
Well, he lied. He flat out lied.
But there was evidence in his career that possibly that was true.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. With Alito, he was a right-wing nut.
Yeah.
You know, they called him Scalito.
Yep.
You know, comparing him to Scalia.
Yep.
And I have always believed that in the case of extremism, it is appropriate to oppose a judge simply because he's extremist. I mean, he could be qualified an extremist, and I still would oppose him. And that was my view on Alito. It was pretty clear from his record. It was totally clear from his record. Okay. The problem is Democrats didn't make the fight. Only Republicans do those things. And so we ended up confirming him. And that one, Democrats could have probably defeated.
Yeah.
But they don't do that. They don't fight that way. It's, you know. See, that's my objection to Alan Grayson and those guys on health care. They run to the talk shows, and they're big fighters for liberals. But when you ask them, oh, we'll support a bad bill, that's okay. The perfect can't be the enemy of the good.
Right.
Then you ask Joe Lieberman, I'll never support it, okay, if I don't like it. And who wins? Lieberman wins.
Lieberman wins, which really sucks because I don't think Lieberman's not supporting it because he thinks it's bad. I think it's all because of the money that's at stake.
Yeah. No, that's the problem.
It's not principle.
I'm not big on the show horse liberals that run
right.
the
no,
talkers,
I know that.
You know, and I mean, they don't fight.
Yeah.
In the end, they talk a good game,
and
the right wing fight.
I know. All right, Brent Podolsky, one last question. I'll let you go. I so appreciate you hanging with us tonight. Wednesday night, State of the Union. What is President Barack Obama going to say?
Oh, he's going to say, "I feel your anger." Let's just hope that the policies match up with the words. I'll tell you one thing though about State of the Unions. When I worked for the House leadership, they would make me put on my vest, put on my tie, slick back my hair, and impersonate a congressman, because many of them hate going there. But if you want to laugh, watch, I won't name the names, when the president walks in,
uh-huh.
watch who is elbowing each other to get to shake his hand to get the front seat.
Oh, I know.
It is a hoot, and you'll see the same people every joint session.
Ileana Ross Layton is one. She's a congresswoman from down here in Florida, and she always wears a bright red pantsuit or something and has to get in there. I know. What is it?
Oh, yeah, there's one whose private nickname, I won't say who she is Elbows. Elbows so-and-so. Congresswoman Elbows.
All right.
You'll see her, though, and you'll laugh.
I will.
But no, I think he's going to feel people's anger. I think what he needs to do is to back it up with tough policies. And the real question is going to be whether he does it, and we'll see.
We'll see. Brent Podolsky, check him out, all his stuff, at thehill.com. He has columns in the columnist section, and then the pundit's blog he writes there as well, and it's a must reading always. And Brent, thank you for being my first guest on the newly reconstituted Nicole Sandler Show at RadioOrNot.com.
It's great to hear. It's like the launching of the Queen Elizabeth.
Yeah.
I love it.
All right, I do too. Thank you so much.
Be good.
You too. We'll talk again soon. All right, the one and only Brent Podolsky. All right, let's do this. We will take a break. Here's a song. I often play clips from this song, and I'm going to play you the whole thing. I am a huge Joe Jackson fan. He is a certainly underappreciated, amazing artist. And from one of his lesser-known albums, too, I can't even think which one it came from. This song was never a hit, but it's always been one of my favorites, and I think you'll understand why when you listen to the words of Right and Wrong. It's Joe Jackson, Radio or Not.
Difference. Right and wrong.
That is Joe Jackson, Right and Wrong. Do you know the difference between the right and the left and the east and the west? And it's not about ideology. It's about right and wrong. And unfortunately, the people on the right, no, RCC, you didn't miss the show. I just played a song to take a little break in the middle. But we are still in full swing. Welcome aboard. I'm talking to the people in the chat room. That's what it should be. I was never a registered Democrat. I was always registered as an independent. And it wasn't until I registered so I could vote in the primary here as a Democrat. And, I'm thinking of changing my voter registration again, but I want to be able to vote in the primary. So I may just keep it because it's a pain in the ass to go back and keep changing it. But, I have never said my party right or wrong. And that's why some people maybe, get mad at me when I say that, when I criticize Obama. But I'm going to call it the way I see it. And if I think he's doing a lousy job, I'm going to say he's doing a lousy job. You know, what blows my mind is there was a piece, and again, I'm a little scattered today because I spent all day working on getting the newsletter out and working with my new pal, Heather Chase, updating the website. If you haven't checked it out, the radioornot.com has been redesigned. Check it out, please. Let us know what you think of it. If you find any bugs, let me know or let Heather know. But anyway, so I neglected my producer duties because I've been just busting my butt all day trying to get that all ready to hit the ground running at 6 o'clock tonight so we can get on the air. I promise I'll be more prepared tomorrow night. Where I was going was there was an article about I can't find it. Is this it? No, man. And I'm losing my train of thought too. This is what I get for not writing things down. Anyway, when I criticize Obama, people get mad at me. But I am going to. I have to. I never follow anybody blindly. And Benedict at Large writes, my party right or wrong? No, we don't go this way. And someone else is asking me to put a list of Obama's accomplishments on my website, even though we're both angry at him. That's a good idea, because he's done a lot of good things. But now we're coming up, I think, tomorrow on the anniversary of the Lilly Ledbetter Act. President Obama's first piece of legislation he signed into law was Lilly Ledbetter. But here we are a year later, and not enough has been done in terms of enforcement. There's a lot of that going around. We will have, let me do this. We're going to try something different. I have one phone line coming in here. You want to try to call in? 954-889-6410 is the number. 954-889-6410. If you want to, make a comment, my conversation with Brent Podowsky, you can get in on that. In the meantime, Wednesday night is the State of the Union. Now, it hits the air at 8 p.m. One thing we can do, if you like, is we'll extend the show that night and I'll stay on. I can make some snarky, snide comments during it, but we can at least, be here live together and watch it. So you can let me know, if that's something you'd like. You can send me an email. We will have a forum, a message board up on the website. Hopefully in the next couple of days, have to figure out a way to keep the dogs quiet this time of the night. A lot of little bugs we are running into here, but, we'll get through them. I talked a bit with Brent Podowsky about the Citizens United case, the one, the Supreme Court ruling that basically killed democracy. Well, Obama came out fighting, and I want to play for you. It's a 3-minute, 4-minute statement, but you should listen to what he said, because afterwards I want to ask you a question about it. So here's the president.
One of the reasons I ran for president was because I believed so strongly that the voices of everyday Americans, hardworking folks doing everything they can to stay afloat, just weren't being heard over the powerful voices of the special interests in Washington. And the result was a national agenda too often skewed in favor of those with the power to tilt the tables. In my first year in office, we pushed back on that power by implementing historic reforms to get rid of the influence of those special interests. On my first day in office, we closed the revolving door between lobbying firms and the government so that no one in my administration would make decisions based on the interests of former or future employers. We barred gifts from federal lobbyists to executive branch officials. We imposed tough restrictions to prevent funds for our recovery from lining the pockets of the well-connected, instead of creating jobs for Americans. And for the first time in history, we have publicly disclosed the names of lobbyists and non-lobbyists alike who visit the White House every day, so that you know what's going on in the White House, the People's House. We've been making steady progress, but this week the United States Supreme Court handed a huge victory to the special interests and their lobbyists, and a powerful blow to our efforts to rein in corporate influence. This ruling strikes at our democracy itself. By a 5-4 vote, the court overturned more than a century of law, including a bipartisan campaign finance law written by Senators John McCain and Russ Feingold that had barred corporations from using their financial clout to directly interfere with elections by running advertisements for or against candidates in the crucial closing weeks. This ruling opens the floodgates for an unlimited amount of special interest money into our democracy. It gives the special interest lobbyists new leverage to spend millions on advertising to persuade elected officials to vote their way or to punish those who don't. That means that any public servant who has the courage to stand up to the special interests and stand up for the American people can find himself or herself under assault come election time. Even foreign corporations can now get into the act. I can't think of anything more devastating to the public interest. The last thing we need to do is hand more influence to the lobbyists in Washington, or more power to the special interests to tip the outcome of elections. All of us, regardless of party, should be worried that it will be that much harder to get fair, common sense financial reforms, or close unwarranted tax loopholes that reward corporations from sheltering their income, or shipping American jobs offshore. It will make it more difficult to pass common sense laws to promote energy independence, because even foreign entities would be allowed to mix in our elections. It would give the health insurance industry even more leverage to fend off reforms that would protect patients. We don't need to give any more voice to the powerful interests that already drown out the voices of everyday Americans, and we don't intend to. When this ruling came down, I instructed my administration to get to work immediately with members of Congress willing to fight for the American people to develop a forceful, bipartisan response to this decision. We've begun that work, and it will be a priority for us until we repair the damage that has been done. You know, one of the great Republican presidents, Teddy Roosevelt, fought to limit special interest spending and influence over American political campaigns and warned of the impact of unbridled corporate spending. His message rings as true as ever today, in this age of mass communications, when the decks are too often stacked against ordinary Americans. And as long as I'm your president, I'll never stop fighting to make sure that the most powerful voice in Washington belongs to you. Thanks.
Okay, so he said a lot of good things there. He said the right things, but we're going to get to work with Congress for bipartisan response. And we're going to make this a priority till we repair the damage that was done. And he says fighting, right? He's saying fighting a lot. That's his new catchword. I have a feeling that fighting for you might be the catchphrase in the State of the Union on Wednesday night. Maybe we're going to have to come up with a little drinking game. If I'll stay on during the State of the Union and, you know, we can make our snarky comments throughout. Maybe we're going to have to come up with a drinking game. And every time he says, I will fight for you, that might be a, you know, take a drink. What do you think? Griff in Texas in the chat room is saying there's no anger or passion in his voice. No, yeah, you may be right. You know, I'm reading this book. Can you see it? It's called Nothing to Fear. It's about the first FDR's Inner Circle and the 100 Days That Created Modern America by Adam Cohen. I'm going to, Dave, whatever you want to drink. I'm going to be interviewing Adam Cohen tomorrow. Unfortunately, I have to tape it at 12:30 in the afternoon. Maybe I'll play it back tomorrow night. It may not be till later in the week because I think I have some things going on tomorrow night that are still in the works. But we'll see. We'll play it by ear. But this book is making me even angrier because this is what we needed from the president. We needed an FDR and his first 100 days. And why the hell didn't Obama do some real gutsy moves to get health care through, to create jobs, to fix the economy? You're right. I'm for Earth in the chat room says Obama is just talking but not doing. You're absolutely right. And he's lost his chance. The first 100 days have come and gone. And now the first year has come and gone. And what he has done really is just pissed off the base. And then you got someone like Chris Matthews, who I just want to smack at this point, who's towing the line with the right wingers that Obama's gone too far to the left. He's got to move more to the middle. Bullshit. I'm sorry. He needs to do, you know, what I'm learning reading this book, and I'm not a historian. So, I mean, I'm loving this book. You know, FDR did what needed to be done, and he moved solidly to the right. And yeah, I cursed Cliff because we're on the internet only right now. If I get picked up by another station, I'm not going to be able to do that anymore. But yes, on those interwebs, I'm allowed to curse. I can even say fuck if I want to, but I won't do that. Anyway, the Obama needs to read this. I mean, he was studying FDR. He was studying Lincoln. He needs to do what needs to be done without worrying about getting reelected in 2012. What he needs to do is take care of the needs of the American people. And he had that chance. He was elected with this huge majority. And then at the inauguration, his ratings were at an all-time high. I mean, he had, you want to talk about political capital. He had such political capital. He could have pushed anything through in those first 100 days. And here we are, you know, they talk about Herbert Hoover and throughout the whole FDR presidency, they were fine talking about how Hoover got them into this mess, how the right-wing policies got our country into that depression. Well, Obama has not learned his lessons from FDR. I'm really looking forward to this interview with Adam Cohen tomorrow because, I'll be very curious to see what he has to say about, you know, about what Obama's done or what he hasn't done. All right. I'm going to play another song and come back again. My guest is not here. I'm going to check email again. I'm hoping. Somebody in the chat room just asked if I can, if I would do a, if I would do a, talk about what happened at Air America. And yes, I will. I'm trying to get Danny Goldberg on. And unfortunately, I didn't see a post. He wrote a post up at downwithtyranny.com, which is Howie Klein's blog. And it just was posted this afternoon. It's the real story behind the demise of Air America and why progressives need to pay better attention. So here's what I'll do. We'll take a break. I'll play you another topical song and come back and share with you some of Howie Klein's Danny Goldberg's. I can't read and talk at the same time. That's really difficult. Some of Danny Goldberg's commentary on downwithtyranny.com. In the meantime, let's see. What should we go with next? All right. One of my favorite songs, from a great album. It was here. I'll go into my music thing for a moment. A guy named Greg Alexander put out one album under the band name of New Radicals. All right. It was not a band. It was Greg Alexander. He played every instrument, it had some backup vocals on it. But it was his from start to finish. He produced it. He wrote it. He performed it. And then after doing this album, he realized he hated performing. He was a weird guy. I did an interview with him once. I'll see if I can find it. I'm going to start putting some music interviews up on the podcast once I start charging for it. But I've got some real gems in there. Anyway, Greg Alexander, better known as New Radicals, and we'll send this one out to President Obama. You get what you give. It's radio or not. All right, that is New Radicals. Yeah, the guy's name is Greg Alexander. And the song, You Get What You Give. And yes, it is a really hopeful song. Don't give up. We got a reason to live. All right, it is Nicole Sandler here on Radio or Not. And I think, I think she's there.
I read the news today, oh boy.
Checking in with us from the Talk Radio News Service at talkradionews.com. I believe we have Victoria Jones on the line. You there, Victoria?
I certainly am. How are you?
I am good. We are, you know, this is the inaugural broadcast of the new Nicole Sandler Show at Radio or Not.
Well, congratulations. I'm very excited to be a part of it.
And thank you so much. We got a lot of people listening online, and we'll archive this afterwards and just sort of figuring out as we go along. So I was tied up all day today putting together the new website and trying to get everything going, and I sort of missed a lot of the news today. So fill us in. What happened today?
Well, it was a funny day because part of today was about things that are happening later in the week. The main thing that's happening later in the week is happening Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern, when the president will offer the State of the Union address.
Oh, yes.
And so we heard a fair bit about that today, some of it in the briefing with Robert Gibbs, in terms of what he's going to talk about. And Gibbs was asked quite a lot of questions as he was sort of probed about the nature of Obama's State of the Union address, because he's going to talk about some fairly modest initiatives to help middle-class families, what they're calling the sandwich generation, tax credits for child care, a requirement that companies let workers save automatically for retirement, caps on student loan payments, things like that. Some journalists had the idea that these were really very mild initiatives. Gibbs making the point that if you're struggling, these are very important initiatives. The White House very much stressing that they're going to help the middle class. They're trying to help the generation where you've got families squeezed between sending their children to college and caring for elderly parents. Also, that the themes are going to be creating good jobs. He'll be talking about his program for job creation, addressing the deficit, helping the middle class, changing Washington. Exactly what that means isn't clear, and it wasn't clear even after Gibbs addressed the question about it. The president will talk about health care. I wasn't able to get a question in about exactly what he's going to say about health care, because it really seems as though the whole thing's it's like corralling cats. You've got 535 opinions on this, and it's really not clear to me from remarks that were made both by Gibbs and the president last week exactly where we are. Are we letting the dust settle, as Gibbs said last week, or are we, as the impression I got from the president in his remarks in Ohio, ready to move ahead on health care? We may find out more on Wednesday. He will also, of course, be addressing national security.
Yeah, so I was just talking to Brent Podolsky about that, and the thing is, it seems like since Scott Brown got elected, there's no news on health care. We don't know what they're going to do. So you really think they're going to wait until Wednesday to let us know what the plans are?
Yes, I don't think we're going to hear very much from the White House in terms of health care. I mean, at the briefing today, even though health care came up, Gibbs was very careful to be saying that he wasn't going to be getting out ahead. We did get a very clear statement from the president on Friday, so clear, so plain spoken and straightforward that you had to wish that he'd spoken this way throughout 2009, of laying out, this is what we want to do with healthcare, and this is why we need to do it, and this is why we need to do it this way. It was the clearest, most well-put case that I've ever heard him make for healthcare reform.
Well, that is what we need. You're right. That's exactly what we needed all along. Now, I just played a statement that the president made regarding the Supreme Court decision on Thursday regarding it about campaign financing, the Citizens United versus the Federal Elections Commission. Do you think he's going to address that strongly in the State of the Union?
I don't know whether he's going to be addressing that. That actually didn't come up today. And I don't have any information on that. That would be very interesting, because he is going to be quite populist in the State of the Union address. So he might, but to go after the Supreme Court when you've got all nine of them sitting in front of you, that would be interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, but the thing is, that decision on Thursday basically gutted democracy as we know it. It's now the what is it? I wrote down the United States of corporate America. I don't see how we can ever have another fair election if this stands. So it'll be interesting to see if he addresses it. I hope he does, because I think this is probably the most dangerous Supreme Court decision in a couple hundred years.
Yeah, it's a huge decision, and it's taken a few days until really today and yesterday before people have started addressing the issue of foreign money, which clearly this decision has done nothing to stop and has made it easier, in fact, for foreign money to come in and to influence American elections.
Yep, you got that right. All right, so, and you mentioned national security. What is he going to mention? He's not going to mention the Osama bin Laden tape. What about that? Is that for real? Do they really think that was real?
Yes, that has been confirmed as being from Osama bin Laden. Yes, indeed,
it has. So he's still alive, huh?
Yeah, still alive and certainly claiming it. And interestingly, this story is about a day old, but I think it's a very interesting story. American law enforcement officials have been told to be on the lookout for female suicide bombers who are connected to Al-Qaeda in Yemen and may have a non-Arab appearance and be traveling on Western passports.
Oh, boy.
Which, I have to say, I hate to sound like Cassandra here, I've been predicting this for like 5 years.
Well, as have I. I'm honestly surprised, and I may take some criticism for saying this, but I'm surprised there haven't been any suicide bombings here yet, and I expect that we will start seeing them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised about this too. I mean, the obvious thing is to go for people who don't look like what you expect. So go for women. Go for women who don't look like Middle Eastern Muslim men, and maybe go for some grandmotherly types.
Ay, ay, ay. It's a scary world getting scarier by the minute.
It certainly is. The other thing that everybody's talking about in Washington today is Ben Bernanke.
Yes.
And his reappointment to the Fed.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know Bernie Sanders had a hold on him, and can this go through if he doesn't release the hold?
Well, it's looking, and it's not only Sanders, Jim DeMint has one too, and it's looking as though it's sort of moving forward. They hope that they will have a vote on this by the end of the week. Bernie Sanders has four reasons why he thinks that Democrats should oppose the Bernanke reappointment. First of all, it's because he was first nominated to the Fed by President George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm.
And that he feels that alone.